Hi, I'm Wendy Francis, nutrition therapist, emotional eating expert, and entrepreneur. I've helped countless people overcome their obsession with food and weight. Isn't it time you overcame what you had become and ignite who you were meant to be? Your time to become an overcomer starts now. Welcome to the Overcoming Emotional Eating podcast. In today's call, you'll actually hear me talk about how to pull yourself up after a fall and what that means. It's a way that you can keep overcoming in your relationship with your food. Take a listen. What does it mean when somebody says you're pulling yourself up, or you're pulling yourself up by your bootstraps, right? That's kind of the common term. And when we think about that, I think many of us think about that phrase with respect to maybe getting our life back on track. Or in this one article that I read, it was getting their finances back on track. This woman had kind of fallen off when it came to her financial budgeting, and she was pulling herself back up by her bootstraps when it came to our finances. But whenever I think about anything, it's been like this for a long time for me, I always think about it in the construct of what's the psychology and the food psychology behind a meaning. And when we think about pulling ourselves up by our bootstraps, you know, first and foremost, I kind of wanted to know, like, what does that really mean? Like, where did that phrase come from? Because sometimes we hear these phrases that have been around, right, for years and years. I don't even know when this phrase was created, but not many of us wear boots with straps on it anymore. Some people do. I mean, if you really go into a cowboy store, you can actually get those boot buckles, so to speak, that you would pull up with a strap, but not all of us wear those. So what does it really mean now? And when I looked that up, it actually means to improve one's life or circumstances through one's own efforts, rather than relying on others. Now, what was so interesting to me when I heard that is I've actually found that recovery from an eating disorder or recovery from an eating issue, learning the balance of your relationship with food, actually comes from learning the balance of this phrase, pulling yourself up by your bootstraps. Because so often I've found when I've worked with clients, it's finding the balance between your boundaries. So where do you rely on others, and where do you rely on other resources? And then where do you have self-reliance? So where do you improve your life circumstances through your own efforts with your relationship with your food? And then where do you give it to others to help with or find other resources? I've worked with so many people over the years that I really recognize that in order to get better with your food and your relationship with your eating, you have to develop better boundaries in life. Because sometimes you have to say no to other people so that you can say yes to yourself. And sometimes you have to say yes to other people and say no to yourself. And knowing where those boundaries are imperative for healing yourself. You have to get better with your communication, whether that be communicating with yourself, communicating with your spouse around what you need with respect to food or time or self-love or self-care. You have to communicate. And finding better balance and boundaries in your relationships and your life are imperative to really help you master your relationship with your food. As I've worked with clients over the years, I've recognized that the balance of asking for help and taking self-responsibility is essential. I've worked with so many clients, and what's so great to see is the change or the evolution of our relationship as we work together. So somebody that might be over-reliant on me in the beginning, maybe calling me every day or every couple days, and then in communicating through that and imparting a sense of self-reliance
can be really beneficial learning in life. Or conversely, for the client that has a crisis at home, I mean, I can remember one of my adolescents early on in practice came in to her weekly session and sat down, and I was like, gosh, so how have you been? What's happened this week? And I remember her saying, well, I was, you know, in the psych ward for a couple of days, and I was like, what? what? And her saying to me, well, yeah, you know, I tried to commit suicide. And I was like, well, you never called. You never told anybody. Both myself as the eating, you know, as the eating therapist on the team, and her therapist that was working around some trauma, and her medical doctor, none of us received a phone call. She'd gone through that crisis alone without anybody on her team helping her, which for her was a psychodynamic effect of how she needed to handle her past. So it was essential in her treatment and in helping her to really recognize that she needed to let us in just a little bit so we could walk beside her and hold her hand, not to control her, not to abuse her, not to manipulate her, but to walk with her. Conversely, for the clients that have been over-reliant because they were afraid, instilling a sense of self-trust, of self-efficacy, right? So finding that balance is imperative. Finding the line where we balance is the essential part of healing. The balance between heart and head, the balance between left and right, the balance between masculine and feminine, the balance between reliance and responsibility. Finding that balance in our healing is the best we can do to make our brokenness whole. So how do we do that and start to really pull ourselves up, whether it be by our bootstraps or something else? There's a number of ways, and the majority of the things that I'm going to talk about really have to do more with a self-reliance piece. I'm also, though, going to talk about resources and developing a full-on game plan, or for some of my clients, we referred it to a war plan, so that you have that listed out for you. But when you're trying to, whether you're trying to change your food, trying to change your relationship with your food, or maybe you changed your food for a period of time and you've fallen off track again. You see, this call can go for any of those moments in time. And the first thing I'm going to tell you you need to remember to do is to not relive the memories. So often I've heard from clients, you know, they can come in and they'll tell me, yes, you know, I fell off this week, whether it was somebody who had binged and purged, or maybe somebody who'd eaten something off what they should have, off their plan. Maybe it was somebody that, you know, didn't eat, one of my clients with anorexia that maybe didn't eat for a period of time. In coming in, what I recognize is that we relive those memories of what we did wrong. They go over and over in our mind. So, you know, first I bypassed the salad that was in the fridge. And then I grabbed that chocolate cake, and then I sat down, and I remember eating the first bite, and I don't remember eating anything else, but then it was gone. And then I wanted to have that ice cream that was in the fridge, and I didn't want to go for it, but I just grabbed the spoon and had one bite. I was able to put it down then, but I couldn't stop later on that night. I came back. You see, that memory, that reliving of the memory, and what many people call a facet of PTSD. Now, I know trauma is a much more significant event, so I'm not talking about eating ice cream and being raped in the same sentence. But what I am saying is that memory and reliving that memory over and over again doesn't teach you anything. You see, you can't change the past. So playing something over and over again in your mind doesn't help. We actually do this for a reason. We relive those memories because we think our cognitive and our unconscious thought both is, gosh, if I can just find out what made me do that, or if I could just change something so that didn't have to happen, I could stop it from happening again. So we try to replay it so we can find a niche, a nuance, something to change. You know, if we think if we really understood what went wrong, we could change it the next time. But the truth is, it's not the truth. We could relive memories for years, and I've had many clients that do that, especially with their food, and it doesn't change anything. So don't relive the memories. Second, relegate the upset to the past. So now's the time to move on, right? With your head held high, no matter how bad that fall off was, whatever that was, whether it was, you know, you fell off with changing your food for months or a day or a week, or maybe you know your relationship with food is bad and you haven't yet started. So relegate what the upset is to the past. We so often keep that in the present. And I've had many clients be in this situation. I'll say, just write it down. You know, in the past, I had a really poor relationship with food. Or in the past, I fell off what I was supposed to be eating. I stopped eating the way I was supposed to in the past. To give your mind a reframe on that is imperative. And number three, with that, don't keep trying to find blame. I can't tell you how important this is. From blaming yourself, I've had so many people over the years come in with such self-deprecation, blaming themselves for this or that, what they ate, when they ate it, why they ate it, blaming themselves for their weight, how much, when, blaming themselves for their diabetes, their heart disease, so much self-loathing that it's intense and it's very difficult to get out from under that blame, because then it gets piled with shame and then you're snowed in. Other people find blame with other people in their life. So I've had clients blame their spouses, their parents, their friends. It's not useful to dwell on the blame. By all means, it is imperative to learn from your mistakes. If someone in your life has caused something, you can't do anything about it, your best bet is to either move away from them, from the source of the problem, or to communicate the problem with them, right? That's imperative. We try to find the blame because we think if we can blame somebody else or blame ourselves, we can fix it. Here's what we know. There's something called locus of control. We do it as a child, and we also do it as an adult. So if I can blame myself, then man, I can figure out what I did wrong, and I can fix it, and I can change it, and I'm in control. I tell you to stop finding the blame, because all it's doing is bringing up shame. Number four, when something goes awry, when you've fallen off plan, when you haven't been on point with your food relationship, when you've fallen into old habits, don't go under the comfort blanket. I love that phrase, the comfort blanket, because we so often get in this, and I do it too, but we kind of get in this space of maybe feeling sorry for ourselves. And we might not all stay there for very long, but all of us are prone to that space of not feeling good about ourselves. And what we know, it only wastes time and it affects other parts of your life negatively. Because what we know with that comfort blanket is that when we're feeling sorry for ourselves, we can't move in to change. And we can't connect with other people either. A lot of times people under their comfort blanket will kind of reach out to friends or family and, oh, I did it again. I ate off what I should have eaten, or, oh, I've gained weight. And what happens then, and I won't go too far into depth because I could talk about it for a really long time, but what happens then is you actually couple in a connection to that other person in sympathy. And that is that's the next thing I want you to think about. Number five is, you know, stop looking for sympathy from other people when it comes to your food or your weight or your body. We don't need sympathy from other people. We need continued support, communication, connection, nurturance, resources. But sympathy is not the thing that we need. We can get stuck in a sympathy-oriented connection. In fact, I found many clients stuck in this kind of relationship with spouses, caregivers, parents. So one person in the family might be, quote unquote, the sick one, and they connect with the rest of the family through their illness. Now, this doesn't have to be a disease. This could be a mental process. This could be being overweight. I see a lot of families, if one family member is overweight, then the rest of the family members constantly trying to pull that person up, so to speak. And the connection happens in sympathy. Oh, I'm so sorry you fell off. Oh, I'm so sorry your weight is where it is. We don't need connection in sympathy. We need connection in empowerment. That's what helps us move ahead. The next, plan ahead. If you've fallen off the wagon, if you need to pick yourself up from your bootstraps, if you need to make some changes, begin to move into what can you plan ahead for. By planning ahead on kind of the next chapter, you begin to empower yourself. What's that going to look like for your next meal, your next day, your next week? What do you really want? I've had many clients in our first session, I'll say to them, all right, so I know where you're at, but what do you want? What do you want for your future relationship with your food? Do you want to keep overeating? Do you want to keep undereating? If you don't, how do you want to eat? And how do you want to feel about your eating? Making that plan and planning ahead is empowering. It's imperative, actually, because if you stay in the past, you can't change that. It just keeps you reliving that memory. And if you stay in the present, for many of my clients, the present doesn't always seem so great because they're not necessarily in an empowered position. But what we can forecast and move into empowerment around is the planning ahead. What does it look like? What does that future vision look like for you and how you want to feel and how you want to eat? You might put the weight you want to be down on there, but I also encourage you to look at the entire picture. How do you want to feel about your body? How do you want to feel about your food? And then, next step, looking at writing out your plans. Put your actions down in front of you. For so many of us, we live in our heads. And when something goes awry, we think about it, think about it, think about it, think of relive what happened, relive what happened, relive what happened. And if I just put a piece of paper in front of a client, I say, okay, bring me into the forward, bring me into the future, bring me into the recovery, bring me into what you want. They can. But when you stay in your mind, you stay with what you know. And if we start to think about future, it's flighty in our mind. So putting that down on a piece of paper is really imperative because it lets us move that plan into our path. You can list down all the things that you're going to be kind of performing to get back on top. When you've written down your plans, you have a physical document to refer to. That's why I like it. And you can stick it up on your wall or put it next to your bed. I always keep my journal by my bed, and I consistently will go back to it if I'm working on something new for myself, for my business, for my life. And you can develop in there a list of resources. I mentioned before a war plan. And so in that, what you're going to do on that is put your resources together, people that are on your resource list, places that can help you, places you want to go that are really grounding or really make you feel empowered and make you feel light and free, and things that can help you be the best that you want to be. Things meaning, right, whether it's your journal, whether it's resources like books or podcasts or music or art, those full list of resources really helps you. And writing it down, I can't tell you how many times I've worked with clients when they've written things down and they're really working hard to make change. That written document is like gold. There's so many people, because, you know, essentially we're human, and at some point we may wax and wane. We may need to go back and uncover a little bit more. We may need to go back and recognize something. we may need to go back and look at our list of resources because we're in a little bit of a tailspin. When we go back to those resources, it can help us tremendously because sometimes they go out of our mind. Stick it on a piece of paper. And then remember to relax. Stressing about a change, stressing about your bootstraps is not going to help. It's going to just increase cortisol, increase endorphins, and none of that's going to help a change. Breathe deep, relax, and smile. I know that sounds funny that I put smile at the end there, but it's true. We actually forget how much just putting a smile on our face can help just shift a little bit of our psyche. Doesn't mean that you have to be happy all the time, but we do know, and research actually states, because they measured it in the brain. It trips me out every time I talk about it, because what we've measured in the brain is that even if you're so unhappy, right, something's just happened radically, you know, terrible. If they've had a person put a smile on their face, it's lifted their mood, and they've measured it with brain chemistry. So it doesn't mean that you have to be happy, but in those moments where we feel so much grief and despair, shame, just put a little bit of a smile just to turn the corners up of your mouth to just help you relax, breathe a little bit easier, and know that the best is yet to come. Knowing the line between the fall and the catch is imperative to healing the relationship with your food. And picking yourself up by your bootstraps with the supportive hands of the resources is the way you can get there.
Thanks for listening. If you like this podcast, share it with a friend. Rate, review, and subscribe. You never know who you'll help become the next overcomer.